Flawed, but not unlawful, under the radar, but not secret, and not a get-out-of-jail-free card for Republican terror suspects. What do you make of that? Well, those are the results of Lady Justice Halleck's review into the so-called on-the-run letters, telling scores of Republicans they were not wanted by police, and they've now been published. The results have been published. News of the existence of the letters threatened, of course, to bring down Stormont. We now know two more Republican terror suspects were mistakenly issued letters. We know now that they were, quote, significant systemic failures in the scheme. And we now know that the scheme was not designed but evolved and didn't have proper lines of accountability, responsibility and safeguards. Right, that's what we do know. There's plenty we don't know. The security journalist Brian Rowan with me this morning. Morning to you, Brian.
Hi, Stephen. Good morning.
There nearly seems to be something in there for everybody, doesn't there? Significant systemic failures, okay, that's a statement of fact from Lady Justice Hallett, but then this stuff, flawed but not lawful, that might please everybody. Under the radar but not secret, that might please both sides of the political spectrum too.
Well, I think the big test of all of this, Stephen, is what will happen and what will change from now. And the thought I have after 3 months of a review and after 300 pages of writing is what, if anything, has changed. This issue, the issue of on the runs, and I read about this in the Belfast Telegraph today, was never a Premier League peace process issue in terms of focus and concentration. You know, you can think back to the battles over arms, the no guns, no government fight in the Trimble area, the fight for photographs as proof of decommissioning in the Paisley-Robinson period, all of those other big issues, prisoners, policing, demilitarization, dismantling the IRA structure that disappeared, the devolution of policing and politics. The issue of OTRs never got into that league. And I think the unionist parties, going back a decade ago, were engaged in a blame game on OTRs, whose fault it was, rather than a focus on what was happening. And you know, one of the clear things that emerges from this Hallett report and all of the confusion over this issue is those bits and pieces of information she sets out over 29 pages in a chapter of this report, which says there's what was out there. And she makes the point that those who followed political affairs in Northern Ireland closely and who knew where to look might have been alerted, therefore, to the existence of some kind of scheme. And the reading in between those lines is there was information out there, there were political footprints out there, there was a trail out there, and no one followed it to find out what was at the other end.
Well, and that's just, let's bring Dennis Bradley into this, one of the authors of the Eames Bradley Report on dealing with the legacy of Northern Ireland's troubles. Morning to you, Dennis.
Morning.
That's the point, isn't it? So Lady Justice Hallett says, look, anybody following Northern Ireland affairs closely would have been able to see this, would have been able to follow what was already out there. So how come the most senior politicians in this country, who presumably follow Northern Ireland affairs closely, didn't see it? Or well, did they?
Well, I think a mixture of both of those things. I think that Brian's statement is actually quite informative and insightful in that this issue was never in the Premier League. And therefore, I think that people either didn't see it or didn't want to see it or didn't see it as being a very big issue that should dominate their attention at that particular time because there was so much else happening. I think the Hallett report is a very significant report in a peculiar way. It doesn't change anything. It doesn't bring us either backwards nor does it bring us forward. But if people want to have an insight into the limitations of legality in dealing with political issues, then I think it's a very good read.
What do you mean?
It's very clear that you cannot deal with conflict or post-conflict or political issues by legal issues alone. And you cannot put on the shoulders of police officers and police institutions, nor indeed of legal DPPs, PPSs, and all that infrastructure of legality. You cannot put political issues and expect them to solve those political those earthly and difficult and complex political issues. If they are burdened with that for too long, then what happens is that the law is stretched to a point where it's either damaged or broken. And the institutions that actually have to carry it in place of the politics and the political processes that bring people forward out of difficult situations are going to either damage that process or, in fact, break it. Now, we have had a number of occasions over about 15 years now where we've seen where our legal structures have actually been pushed to breaking point. Sometimes the Ombudsman's Office got broken down, sometimes the DPP got broken down, sometimes the actual judiciary itself got itself into trouble. We've now reached a situation where we are being told by the highest legal authority within this land that we cannot afford to continue to deal with the past. We're also being told by people who understand these issues and know the cost of these issues that this is costing us dearly in terms of money, but also in terms of the actual authority of the legal processes that are so important to any civilised situation.
So do you think the police have been made scapegoats here?
It's not that they have been made scapegoats, but actually I think that the Hallett report is quite respectful in its acknowledgement that it is dealing only with the legal processes and how it evolved, as you rightly said, that this was not particularly well oversighted, was not particularly well constructed, and it evolved to meet continuing situations. And it's torturous when you read the report to understand the number of times when people, the politicians, tried to come to terms with this issue, this anomaly, as they kept describing it, but actually failed and therefore kept putting it back into the legal structures, particularly into the police. And there are strong criticisms, not so much criticism, but there are strong indicators in there that acknowledge that the police did some things that were perhaps not appropriate within a normal society, but they were the only they were the only people in town who could deal with this situation, and therefore they at times did things that in any normal situation they wouldn't do.
Well, Brian Rowan, of course, we hear about this catastrophic error as it's been described, but we still don't know how the police made that catastrophic error, do we? Like, how did they make it? And more to the point, well, after they then spotted it, why didn't they rectify it? And Lady Justice Hallett says that's beyond logic.
And that's why George Hamilton came out again yesterday and apologised again for that police blunder, which meant that John Downey was wrongly given one of these letters of assurance. Yeah. I'm interested in what Dennis is saying, because I think, and your point, are the police being scapegoated in this? This was a political deal, Stephen, at the highest level. A deal between the Blair government and Sinn Féin. We're arguing about who knew what and who didn't know what. How much do we really know about the decommissioning process? How much do we know about the process that has led to the recovery of some of the remains of the disappeared? And it is a fact of life in peace processes that there are things that happen off stage and out of sight where we don't have the fine detail. But if you look and you read this report carefully, Stephen, they in that 29 pages in Chapter 8 where they outline information that was in the public domain, I'll just take you through four little bits. They make reference to the Evelyn Glenholm story that I did when I was at the BBC in June 2002, where I reported that the Glenholm's OTR case had been settled along with some dozens of other cases. Now, in that report, I set out the process. It was a request for information to the Northern Ireland office, a referral to the prosecuting authorities, a case review by the Crown Prosecution Service, and a response that Evelyn Glenholmes was no longer wanted. Now, what I've described to you there is the administrative scheme. We didn't call it the administrative scheme at that stage, but we outlined the process. Now, what were the follow-up questions from unionist politicians at that stage? Did anyone say, hey, what's going on here? How has this case been settled? What does this mean? How many? And then if you go through other figures, Stephen, in the report, they deal with the figures released by the Attorney General's Office in 2007. They deal with the figures in the Eames-Bradley report in 2009. And they set out a letter written by the Assistant Chief Constable, Drew Harris, in 2010, sent to the policing board, Stephen, where he dealt with 218 cases, 173 of them not wanted. Now, you can argue that you didn't know, and you can argue, and we could maybe understand if you've missed one bit of information along the way. But if you miss all of these pieces, then I think people can justifiably ask, why did you not ask? And if you had asked, then you would have found out much earlier than 2014 about the fine detail of this administrative scheme and the cases that were being dealt with within this OTR process.
Well, let's speak to the Sinn Féin MLA, Gerry Kelly. We're waiting for the DUP MP, Sammy Wilson, to come through. We're having difficulty getting him this morning. Gerry, good morning to you.
Tim.
Why did you keep this under the radar?
Well, I mean, if you read the Hallett report, you will find that she doesn't say that Sinn Féin kept this under the radar. On the contrary, it says that Sinn Féin pursued publicly in terms of wanting a public commitment and got a public commitment from both governments in as early as 2000 in the Weston Park talks.
Let me
finish because you've asked the question. We asked for a public commitment and we continued to press them for the public commitment to that. So you have to look at the administration, what's called the administration scheme, as something which was taking place while they were trying to sort out the overall issue of the political commitment. Because there are still people who are on their own who have not been sorted out. And it is still our view that there is a political commitment from both governments to sort that out, because they said it publicly at that time.
A public commitment
Gerry? Is a blaze of publicity. I mean, I'm going to have to listen to Barney Rowan. And there are 30 pages of examples of when issues around the OTRs were public. And it actually involved every single party. For instance, David Trimble was offering a way to deal with OTRs in the early 2000s, which became known as the Trimble option, which did not work. But nevertheless, he knew about the OTRs and wanted to sort them out. David Ford, who denies he knew anything about this, and his predecessor, Sean Neeson, and Eileen Bell, were offering, and David Ford was saying, we can cope with you dealing with the OTRs as long as the issue of arms is dealt with as well.
So it was just the DUP kept under the radar then, was it?
Dealing with it is erroneous.
It was just the DUP kept under the radar, was it?
No, here's what the DUP did, because the DUP knew about it as well. But look to Ian Pearce's letter to the British government in 2004, because all that he was interested in was to say that this is going on, but it wasn't us who were involved in it, and I want a letter from you to say publicly that it was the UUP who were doing this deal and not us. Now, that doesn't mean to say that they didn't know about it. What it means to say is they wanted their hands off it, which is an entirely different process.
You know, it's interesting, isn't it, Gerry, because you're saying that this wasn't kept under the radar.
I didn't say it wasn't kept under the radar, because, in fact, in fairness to Lady Hallett, she says that. But what you said was that Sinn Féin kept it under the radar, whereas Lady Hallett actually says, we pushed for it to be public. I mean, part of my job at the time was to go around in the whole peace process, to go around internally and talk to people throughout Ireland. How do you think we ended up with over 200 names? Because as the process became known, as you know, it was being explained as I was going around, and people were coming forward with names. Sure, nobody knew who was on the run or who wasn't.
And you saw this, you were seeking a commitment to get precisely what? What do you determine the commitment is?
In any conflict resolution situation, and there are unfortunately very many of them that you can point to, including our own and outside of that, issues such as the issue of arms, demilitarisation, policing, sometimes it's exile, sometimes it's what's called people on the run. All of those issues are part of dealing with any conflict. And you will see that. And in fact, ironically, despite the argument we're having now, Stephen, or the discussion we're having now, you will find that we're being invited to all sorts of places and to explain how we dealt with these issues.
Please.
And are looked upon as people, despite the flaws, who have made a good fist of dealing with a lot of these things. And, you know, and some of the statistics, and I don't want to go through what Barney said, but I think the Eames Bradley report is an example of the numbers that were involved. And also just 2 weeks after the instigation of the institutions with Martin McGuinness and Ian Paisley, we had Chris Thornton putting out a whole ream of what the details and statistics of the administrative scheme were.
We know and we have known about one of the letters that was issued to Downey, to Mr. Downey, mistakenly by the police. We now learn from this review that there were two more letters issued mistakenly. Do you think the public have a right to know who those people are?
No, I don't think so.
And why?
And I'll tell you why. Because whoever they are, there may be or may not be a court case. And Justice Hallis was very clear about not naming names which were not already in the public arena on that basis. So you can't have it both ways.
So you know who they are, don't you?
Let me do this for Blessy. You see, and you know, you're a journalist. And many times during our process, all the time during our process, and in fairness to the media, they always wanted to know every single thing that was going on. But to be frank and to be honest, the blaze of publicity in many of these issues clearly would not have helped the situation. So there were all sorts of things going on. And, you know, when we talk, and I'm sure we will as we go through this conversation about victims and survivors, you know, there's victims and survivors on the national side also who have had to face over a period of 40 years and more the fact that less than a handful of state forces have ever appeared in front of any court.
And yet it is Sinn Féin who want inquiries into those state forces. It is Sinn Féin who want any of those soldiers who may have been involved in illegal activity to be named, to be brought to justice openly. And yet you do not want the public, and indeed, more importantly than the general public, Gerry, you don't want the victims to know who possibly their perpetrators are, who have been given these letters by the state.
First of all, you're making a statement which I didn't make, so please don't make a statement for me that, you know, we want all these people named, et cetera, et cetera. What we want is equality in terms of victims and every other issue that we're dealing with here. But then to go back to, you know, that we don't want people named, et cetera, et cetera, I've already explained where we are in that. Now,
do you know who they are?
The John Downey case, because there's someone we can't talk about because it is in the public now. Two things to be said about John Downey. First of all, John Downey denies any involvement in the Hyde Park bomb. That's the first thing, and which is forgotten by press time and time again in this. The second thing is that his letter, which the British have said was a mistake, his letter stood up to court challenge. So when we get into the argument about these letters and that, realize that the only example we have is the John Downey example, which has held up to the rigors of the judicial process.
Do you know who these two people are?
No, I don't. But if I did, I wouldn't tell you.
Why not?
For the very reasons I'm only after going through a couple of minutes ago. And let me talk about the other, you know, the 200 cases. You see, whatever they say about it now, as we stand, and actually Alec Atwood probably proves this if you want to move it away from Sinn Féin and everybody else, because I forget the date, but it was the early 2001 or 2002, he sent off a letter about a family who had approached him about someone who had jumped bail and had lived in the South for a considerable period of time at that stage, and asked what the process was and was advised by the NIO to put forward his details and his status would be seen. And if today you went to the police or the authorities and said, look, I want to know if you're looking to question me, and solicitors do this on an ongoing basis, by the way, I want to know if you want to question me, and if you do, what do you want to question me about? Can that be done away with? Because that is a right of any citizen to ask that question.
The former Detective Superintendent, Crime Advisor for Northern Ireland, Alan Maines, joining us this morning. Good morning to you, Alan.
Good morning.
Good morning. Help me understand this part of this puzzle. So the police make a mistake. They make a catastrophic error, as it's been described. They notice the mistake, and yet they don't rectify it. Now, how does that add up? How can the general public feel that that doesn't smell? They make a mistake. Many people would think that's human error. OK. Then they notice the mistake about a man that they know is wanted. Men they know are wanted. Three more. We have two more Republican terror suspects. They might not be men. Let's call them individuals. And the police don't go back and rectify that mistake. How much does that smell?
Well, I can understand why anybody would think that there's issues underneath, undercurrents in relation to what you just said. I mean, let me just be very clear here from the very outset. The people that I have every sympathy for are the victims here. Every sympathy for them. So to go back to your point, the PS&I stroke RUC were always determined to catch individuals and bring them before court, and that's the terrorists that you now refer to as OTRs. There was no sense of going out to do that, you know, in terms of making mistakes. We worked night and day to do that, and everybody should be aware of that. To go back to the mistakes that you referred to there, well, it was a system that seemed to be a very poor system. I was a senior detective up until 2007. I was not aware at the time that this was ongoing. I was certainly aware of individual cases where on-the-run terrorists, as they class them, which is a pretty poor name, actually. But there were terrorists who were outside the jurisdiction. We had a specific unit who dealt with that, the extradition unit. So if there was an individual stopped in Southern Ireland, England, or wherever the case may be, we had to continually review the cases at that time to see if there's evidence to arrest them. Big mistake, I think, Stephen, here that a lot of people seem to miss, and that is you cannot put out a letter to individuals without the caveat of, however, if there's further evidence that comes to light. That is a prerequisite to putting any letter out. So that is the big mistake, I think, by the NIO.
Yeah, but Gerry Kelly, you're still with us this morning.
Yeah.
Do you accept that for anyone who has been issued a letter, if further information comes to light, that the police and the authorities have the power to arrest them and prosecute?
Oh, I mean, let me quote what it says in these letters. The ex-officer there is absolutely right. If any other outstanding offence or offences came to light, or if any request for extradition were to be received, these would have to be dealt with in the usual way. And that was always in the letters. You see, there's a myth out here, which is around this issue of amnesty. Republicans never asked for amnesty. We never said there was an amnesty. Anybody who got that, got those letters knew that that was the caveat in it. But the investigation done through the police services, and it went through all the police services, what we were told was it went through all the police services, was that word came back either, no, we have no reason to arrest or question you, in which case they got this letter which stated that, or they were still looking for them. And there are people who they were still looking for.
And so these two more individuals now who we know received letters by mistake, would you have any problem with the police service of Northern Ireland now contacting those people, writing and say there's been a mistake made and the mistake needs to be rectified? The letter was issued in error?
Well, I think if there was a mistake made that they should be told. Yes, I do.
And that would withdraw the...
Well, whatever it would do...
The letter, would it?
Well, whatever it would do, you see, that would be tested in court. And that's where we, you or I, are... Mr. Mains can't go in terms of all of that because none of us know where that might go. But bear in mind that from a Sinn Féin point of view, we were dealing with issues, and indeed not just ourselves, the British government and others were dealing with it, that affects every single post-conflict situation that you can think of.
Well, Dennis Bradley, I know you're still with us this morning, and you know, people might think this is a question of what happened in the past, but there is a present day question for the new Chief Constable of the PS&I, George Hamilton, and surely it is this: if indeed this review has now focused on one aspect, focused on a number of aspects, but one of the aspects being that two more letters were issued by mistake. Is it for the new chief constable to ensure that those people are written to and that they do rectify those mistakes?
Well, I think that that's a possibility, and I don't see anything wrong with that. But
why wouldn't the police do that?
Well, they probably will do that. And that's, my frustration with this, Stephen, is that in some ways all of this stuff's a red herring. Because the consultative group in the past, the Eames Bradley group, was referred to that it laid out actually what was happening pretty authoritatively and pretty accurately long before this became a political row. About a year ago. But people do not refer to the fact that the same report actually said that this ground has now been so messed up, has now been so ploughed up, that it would be impossible to sort it out in any immediate or short-term way, that the only way it ever can be sorted out is within a broader context. And the broader context is that you have to deal with the past in a way which is comprehensive and satisfactory to all victims, not completely pleasing to all victims, not completely bringing all victims to a place where they are completely satisfied, because that probably is impossible, but comprehensively to deal with this issue. That's the only way it can be done. And it is now becoming clearer by the day that we cannot do this alone without the involvement of the two governments, that the political parties here will just keep rowing about this situation, and the two governments need to step into the room and lead the way in this.
OK, Dennis, thank you. The DUP promised us that Sammy Wilson would be on this morning. They haven't turned up, which is interesting in itself. So our thanks to Sinn Féin and Dennis Bradley and Brian Rowan for coming on the programme.